Accession number 20332, reel 1.
Captain Leroy, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Dulwich, London.
Which year was this?
In 1925.
You were telling me earlier that you have some French background.
Yes, my parents were French, but I was born at Dulwich in London, mainly because my father was dealing with hand-woven lace from Lyon in France, and their sales office was in London. So out of six children of the family, three were born in the UK and three were born in France.
Was your mother English?
She was. She was Scottish. But she took on the French nationality.
Can you tell me about your education, please?
Yes, I was educated, fully educated, at St. Joseph's College, Beulah Hill, London, from 1931 until 1942.
Did you hear Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did.
Under what circumstances?
Oh, your usual family gathering in a dining room, a lounge, on the television, not television, on the radio.
Did you have any feelings about it at the time?
I was watching the reactions of my father and my older brother. My older brother, who was then, I would put him 8 years older than me, 20, was crying, and my father was on the verge of tears. Having himself experienced six terrible years in the First World War. And at that time of 1939, he was 48 years of age. Pretty much after, when France collapsed, when Belgium, Holland, France collapsed, he joined General de Gaulle's forces. So he was off from 1940 with de Gaulle. And his role was London headquarters, later went over to Bayeux to establish General de Gaulle's headquarters, and then carried on and was military governing in Rouen. So from my point of view, when I joined the Navy, all my sort of contacts there was French, you see. Am I putting this right?
Yes.
So I left the college in 42, really directly into the Navy in 1943.
Before you joined up, how much had the war affected you?
Very, very much so, because I was a very bitter young man, knowing that we have a home in France, which we understood from sources my father got had been blitzed. All my relatives, one had died in France, various things going on, my father involved in the war, and I really had one thing I wanted to do, was to get in and do something. That was on the base of my mind. I had a hatred of Germans, not Nazis, just Germans, because I, as a boy in France, I went with my father right through the First World War battlefields, and he was 48 months throughout in the trenches, in these areas in the north of France, right through to Verdun, you name it. And having seen what he's been through, which has been gas, bombardments, and everything else, the whole thing of another war was to me horrific. And these, I call them, these buggers who start another war, creating havoc, destroying homes again, refugees. I just had it on my mind at 17 years of age. When I went into the Navy, I was sort of determined that I'll do anything. To do anything, you know, sort of. It was a 17-year-old reaction.
Where was the home in France?
In Dury, near Amiens, which was just on the just near a big tank battle, the one of the only tank battles that de Gaulle fought before he left France.
Were you in any bombing of England by the German Air Force?
Yes, we were. We were living down in South Norwood, which is near Croydon, and there was a lot of bombing, and a lot of nightly raids, living in Anderson Shelter, living under the staircase, even acting then at 15 and 16 years of age with helping with the area wardens. It was quite horrendous in that area. A lot of fire, a lot of incendiary bombing. Yes.
What was your address at that time?
South Norwood Hill, 101 South Norwood Hill.
Did any bombs fall near there?
Oh, yes. Yes, quite a few. In fact, all we had, all the house, which is quite a sizable home, we had all our windows blown in, that sort of thing. They all were boarded up. You know, really, ceilings down. One, basically, life was, if you were living at home, was basically in and out of the shelter.
Where was the shelter?
In the garden.
What was it like in there?
Oh, it was put in a part of the garden where we had it cemented floored on the sides, and went out one day, it was full of water, because the water level, or the rainwater, seemed to get to it. So we had to put drainage through. But that had 4 camp beds in. So you would tend to go down there at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and be in the shelter.
Was the bombing frightening?
Yes. The initial bombing of London in 1940, when they had the real blitz on the main London, was frightening. 40-41. Then spasmodic nightly raids. 42-43. I was in the Navy when the doodlebugs came on. And that was all over the place in that area. And a lot of people were evacuated. My mother was evacuated out of the area. Go on.
You carry on. How did public morale stand up to the bombing?
Wonderful. Absolutely incredible. Everybody helping each other. Tremendous link up with the air raid wardens and assistant air raid wardens. You name it, friendly with police. Everything was friendly. I think it's quite incredible. You got to know your neighbours and you got to know people more in those days than you would nowadays. You can move into a house today and not know your neighbours for a long time. But you're always calling and saying, is everybody all right? Is this all right? You know, nobody seemed to be short of a friend.
Was there any hatred of the people carrying out the bombing?
Oh, of course. I mean, I had the attitude then. They're going to say, why is it going on? Why are they doing this? And why is this going on? Is it necessary in life to go out and kill people? We didn't start it. What the hell are they up to? No, that's enough now. No, stop it. I'm not going out. You're not recording this, are you?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. And did Dulwich, did your school get bombed very much?
No, it didn't. It had incendiaries on the college. Quite a few incendiaries in that area. Quite a big buildings, but not hit by any bombs, and nothing destroyed in the way of classrooms and things. But carefully, it was a Christian Brother school, which is Catholic order, Christian Brothers, and they were all air raid warning in that area, and on top of the college, looking at the roof, after the roof. There again, you had all the neighbours, also linking in the area ward neighbours, looking after the college. It was a friendly community.
Why did you want to go in the Navy?
Gosh. My father wanted me to go into the Free French. I had already got my London University matriculation. So if I had gone into the Free French, I mentioned that education standard, because I would have had to go on to Malvern College, where the Free French cadets, they call them cadets, were there, which means to say you couldn't go into any active service till you were 19. But that was it. I would have stayed at Malvern till I was 19 and acted as a cadet. Got a commission then, gone through training, had a commission, but I wouldn't have gone into any service active until I was 19. So I was anti that. My father was away. I don't know where he was. And I volunteered for the Navy.
What happened after that?
What happened after that? God. Yes, well, I went to naval training at HMS Collingwood. That was basic training of seamanship. Then we were interviewed at the end of that 3 months whether we should go for commissions, even before no sea service. There was no question. You will go to sea for 6 months, then we'll see. Now, some of the select, call them trainees, would finish their 3 months and would go for seagoing commissions. So they'd have to go 6 months for sea, then go to the cadet college for their commissions. But we didn't. We immediately left and went up to HMS Loch Ilott on the west coast of Scotland, where we went through very strong commando training with the idea that at the end of this training you would obtain a commission and then you would go into some form of branch, whatever you wanted to go into. So basically, when you say the Navy, I didn't see the sea. I was more or less in an army role, in a way, charging around on the wilds of Scotland and all sorts of tremendous physical training. Because that area of Loch Ilott was where Lord Lovett initially in 1940-41-42 did the commander training for No. 4 Brigade. So all his training areas were there on the beaches around Loch Ilott. And you were isolated. You didn't see anybody apart from the people you're training with for at least 6 to 8 weeks. There was nobody there. There was one single railway line coming through from Fort William to Mallaig and Mallaig to Loch Ilott. And that's a single track daily.
What did you think of the training?
Severe, but quite... coming directly from college, where you had a certain physical standard you were at the college, it didn't. The physical side didn't really worry me at all. It was I could cope with it, but from anybody older than myself that were going through in their 26, there were some Australians there, probably in their 30s, well, it might have been quite something initially.
What happened next?
I was sent to HMS Armadillo on Loch Fyne for a commando school. And this was initially this was for units that were being prepared to get early in on D-Day before the landings to do a certain role on the beaches. So there was training them with them.
How did you cope with it?
Fine. I was commissioned. I had a rank of midshipman. And I was commissioned. Having done that role, I volunteered for special services. Sticking my neck out when I was there. And I was posted down to HMS Appledore in North Devon, which is where you are here. And that was for swimming, underwater swimming.
Were you any good at that?
No, we didn't. I thought it would be very good being a swimmer. And they got there and said, well, we don't really want people who swim. We want to teach you survival underwater and to rely on your equipment. So anyhow, that was part of the training. And the idea was to explain. Can I go ahead and explain the role then?
Please.
You have a position throughout the beaches in Normandy. The Germans had put in tremendous defences on the beaches, which were in rows and rows, very Germanic, 5 yard spacing, initial row of tree trunks with mines on, the next crisscross girders, and that was put into place, the next was another row. So you had 3 rows of obstacles, basically right from all the beaches of Normandy. and they had Tellermines fitted on them, or some of them had German 75, no, French 75 millimeter shells with the nose cap changed into percussion caps for pressure. So you press on the shell and up it would go. So any landing craft coming in, you would, coming in without seeing the obstacles, would hit these fields. Well, what was happening, the Navy thought, God bless them, that there were certain areas of Normandy. We talk of one beach area, of Sword Beach, which was a complete left. Looking frontal into France, you had Sword Beach going extremely to Oustram, which was ahead of the canal for Caen. Well, in that area, facing Rivabella, facing Lyon-sur-Mer, facing Luc-sur-Mer, and where Hedley Cliff, Hedley Phillips was, Saint-Aubin, you had the landing planned was to be taken by a beach group, followed up, when that's been taken, followed up by 25 minutes later by troops coming through. And the main troops coming through were the four, in my area, were the Internet Four, number four, Commando Brigade, I love it, including 177 Free French commandos, which were to come in that area, go through the beaches, and take Oustrom. The commandos had to go through and relieve the paratroopers on the Orne. Well, the Navy thought, we must not get, we can stop casualties, so we can, on the initial landing. The whole thing was, how do we stop it? How can we just, on all the bombardment that went on, it couldn't safeguard or couldn't state that beach obstacles would be destroyed. They couldn't say that. So one had to be prepared, and they prepared our small teams, which would go and cut, excuse me, try and cut out as much of the beach area, small sections of the beach, as possible. And that was the role. And in fact, on my sector, on D-Day, I had a team of 18 men and a petty officer. When we came with the first landing craft, there was no landing craft operating, it was all waiting. We came in under rocket fire, which was ships firing rockets directly onto the beach. So we were seeing behind the beaches going up with all the rockets hitting the beaches. But you could just see visible beach obstacles showing. And various parts around the coast, depending on the tide, some were covered, some weren't covered. And in my sector there, you could see they weren't covered. You could see just beginning to poke the head through. So there was no question of diving. There was no question of your surface with your small amount of explosive. And the idea was, don't try and blow up your obstacles, take out mines. And that was it. So having got through onto the beach, one got into a hole, and there was plenty of shell holes, as soon as you could, and you sat there waiting for the landing to start. That was it. So you were sort of looking, the whole thing starting.
But we've jumped ahead a little bit because you're at Appledore. Can you?
Appledore was a training base.
Can you take me step by step from Appledore up to landing on the Normandy beaches, please?
Well, you've got the training in Appledore was, again, commando training. Officers and the petty officers were all volunteers, but we couldn't get any men. So I remember going down to Portsmouth Barracks with Lieutenant Hargreaves to see the base commander, and defaulters were all fell in there in a large assembly hall, a little bit like the Dirty Dozen. It was saying anybody who volunteered to join these gentlemen on special services would hand over their service records to them, and you would come out of prison, so the Portsmouth prison. And so I collected, in all my youth, then I was 18, as a midshipman, I collected 26 men. And we had to go from Portsmouth. They were all coming out. They were all pasty-faced, some pimply-faced. They'd been inside and looking quite rough. And I had to take them to HMS Dolphin, which is in Portsmouth, which was a submarine base school, where they had to go. They had to go in the 30-foot diving chamber to see if pressure affected their ears. And I lost, I think then I lost three of them. Couldn't, they had trouble with their ears. So they then went back to, they went back to barracks. And then we did a simulated escape from the submarine then to see if they can face up to going in a chamber, to go out of a chamber, submarine chamber, and how they get to, you know, how they reacted. So they all thought, was all the rest of them think this is rather fun, you know, where we go, where do we go next? So we all go up to, via London, and I lost, I ended up with 18, but I lost some in London who deserted. And then with the rest of them, I ended up to Cumberland, to the demolition school in Cumberland. By then, there were quite a ropey crowd of boys. They didn't want discipline. They didn't want anything. They were just more typical of their ilk. So we got to the explosive school, and I remember the first day at the explosive school, all sitting at desks. And a naval lieutenant came in, who was the explosive officer, and none of them stood up when he came in, and I thought, oh, my God, we're going to start off with this all the time. So he ignored it. And he came round and he says, right, I know what I'm going to do. We're going to start talking first how to set off an explosion. You have your explosive, you have your cortex, you have your time fuse, you have this, that. He was going on and on about it. And you can see everybody just using, picking their noses or playing with their face. You can see that they couldn't care less, you see. So then he got up. He says, right. And he had a box. He produced a small amount of explosive and put it in each one of the desks. And he put the time fuses on the desks and he put the cortex on the decks, on the tables. And he says, right now, gentlemen, go out and make a bang, you see. So that completely changed them. They turned around and says, excuse me, Gov, he says, can you run through that again, please? Can you just give another little explanation? And that was a changing point. So they went out and they all made bangs. And they all came back and said, it's bloody marvellous. This is it. So then in this two-week period, they progressed into using explosives to blow up anything you can think of, including downing trees and you name it, and safes. And there was one of the lads there, was he says, this is like a bloody refresher course. He says, I've been in once with this. You know, and you think, well, how did you get in the Navy then? You know, this sort of thing. Anyhow, we finish that course, and we get down, they're all in blues, Navy blues. We get down to Appledore, and they're all issued with khaki, and they all have Royal Naval flashes and Navy hats. But they weren't given the commando flash on the uniforms until they did their training down there. And they were in Nissen huts, training. They've got their own restaurant, Nissen huts, and severe training. And then they changed. You suddenly see them become quite elite fellows. And they kind of get smart. Boots were becoming smart. Gaiters were, every morning on parade, were smart. They even cropped their heads because we had a lot of perspiration and difficult washing. And then I was telling them about accidents and cuts on your head and things. It's easy to deal with you, so we have a shaved head fellows. And that was a unit. And from that unit, we went. We went on exercises around the country, to various pre-landing exercises. Then came the landing.
Can you take me through the landing, step by step, crossing the channel and so on?
We went MT... like large motor gunboats and towing the landing craft with equipment. All our equipment and things were stacked in the landing craft, one landing craft for us. And we were towed, and just before the landings, we embarked from this launch onto the assault craft.
What was the crossing like?
Very rough. In fact, it was... We embarked in Portsmouth, and it was torrential rain, terrible day, and it was, as you know, D-Day was postponed for a day. It was postponed 24 hours, and that was sheer bugger, that was really. It was And I thought, what the hell, we're all going to be ill and sick, and you're all trying to put your gear on and all this. It was quite a... There was tremendous humour amongst them all. There was quite a few, like, Cockney types who had a most weird sense of humour, and they did respect rank from a point of view. They did understand. Well, they never called me sir, they called me Gov. And that's strange for somebody at my age. But in those days, I was 6 foot three and used a box. And I think they were rather not wanting to mix in any rough house or anything. And I think that's how we kept a lot of discipline. A little bit. A little bit.
Did you ever have to punch any of them?
No. Never. They were... Never. They were... I can remember instances down at Appledore, being on the duty officer at the camp, and one of them coming up to me says, Kirby, you got a girlfriend. He said, would you like a clothes length for her, a nice dress length? So I said, what have you been up to? He said, no, it's all right. I've got some friends in town in Biddeford. He says, if you want a nice length of dress, things, I can get a hold of it for you. And of course, they were all sorts of little games and things, and up to their pranks.
So you're crossing the channel.
Yes.
Can you tell me about going into the beach?
Well, as I said before, you go in and you had your time fuses for the setting your explosives off, and you're careful to put them all. I think we did one lot on 6 minutes and the other on 5 minutes. So we gave them all plenty of time to get out of the water. And having got out of the water, we waited for the landing. We were out 3/4 of the way up a beach. We got out of the way of the edge. And of course, when we were going up, I explained to you why we weren't shot at. Going up the beach, we could see the Jones coming back down the streets where we were at Lyon somewhere. We could see them coming down the streets, towing machine guns, and there was no firing on them, and there were no firing on us. And I was saying, why weren't we being fired at? Is because the Navy had a lot of close support gunboats, not the heavy battleships or the cruisers, but small MG guns with batteries. And if the Germans had opened up in any way in the form of their positions that were still intact after the bombing and bombardment, say they'd opened up, they would have been spotted and they would have been blasted. So they wanted to completely hold their fire until the landing got underway. So there was a lull.
So once you hit the beach, what did you then do?
It was a lull. Get your head down. Get in a hole and say, Christ, I've survived this far. Let's see what's going to happen. And I would say, looking at a beach where you have a normal run-up of a beach, the tide is going out now, and as a normal beach gradient, we got up to the top gradient. When I say that, because we even could look down a road, but we weren't looking down a road anymore. We got our heads down. And then it started. Then the landing started. Then you had the initial landing coming forward. You had naval groups of naval commandos coming forward, erecting signs. All the beach had to be covered in various signs, all from one sector to another. And you had extremities of beaches. You had areas where the infantry should come. You had areas where the tanks should come. Don't approach it here because you've got soft sand. Everything, you know, was up. And it was complete rehearsal. This has been done so many on training exercises that the whole thing was run through like rehearsal. Now, whilst this was going on, that you had a commencement of sniper fire, quite intensive sniper fire, trying to pick people out and people off. And then you had the beach group coming into land, which objects that they were to take the fortifications and take the beach. And the beach group were made up. Now, again, I could be wrong on some of the names, but I think it were the Queen's and the King's Regiment. And I saw the South Lancs come to mind to me, and I think Ops and Bucks is the name that we went in training and certain exercises with. But this is the sort of regiments that came in to take the beach. Well, as soon as they, as soon as they're landing,